You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is the Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Anfield.
Hello everyone and welcome to today's Blood Red Podcast. I'm your host Tom Cavilla and I'm joined today by Theo Squires and Beth Lindop. We're going to be chatting about last night's Merseyside derby defeat, unfortunately. Obviously a tough game for Liverpool last night, not one, you know, a lot of fans are going to look back on in years to come with fond memories of. But before we get into the game, just like to say thanks to our sponsor NordVPN for today's podcast. To get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, if you're interested, go to nordvpn.com/bloodred. Our link will also give you 4 months extra on your 2-year plan if you use that sign up code. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. And the link will be in the episode description box on YouTube if you're interested to find out a bit more about Nord and their security plans for your internet use.
Of course they're interested, Tom. Everyone's on board with Nord.
Yeah? Okay. Right, well, we'll start talking about the game then.
I'd rather talk about Nord.
No.
It's much more cheerful.
Theo, we'll start with you. I believe you were there last night.
For my sins.
Yeah. It looks like the title was gone for Liverpool at last. You know, there's been a few games recently where people have said, oh, that might be it. I think people thought that after the Palace game, then Arsenal gave Liverpool way back in. But is this the moment when it's finally gone?
Yeah, I'd say so. It's very hard to see Liverpool clawing it back now. In a normal season where it's two teams going for the title, you've always got that small hope that there is a slip-up and you get let back in. But when it's two teams and when Arsenal's goal difference is that much better, it's going to be very, very hard for Liverpool now. Like, we're looking at a number of games recently where they've not been at their best. I put it back to the Forest game, really. Like, I know they've had a couple of wins since then, but that was a game where they weren't creating anything and it took a moment of magic right at the end to snatch victory. But that was when you had your top players still in a bit of form and it was a shock performance that they weren't up to scratch. But since then, they have got worse and worse with each week. They've looked more tired. And it's just, it's a build-up from the injury crisis, isn't it? Like, a number of these senior players have had to play so much football and they haven't had the reserves there because the players have been injured. And now it's taken the toll on them. They're all knackered. The players coming back from injury, they're trying to build up, get up to speed like Trent, and you're seeing the glimpses, but they're not quite there. And then you've just got the likes of Nunes, Salah, Konate, I'm sure we'll get to, who just look like they've forgotten how to kick a football. They've lost form completely. And just how Liverpool approached the game last night was all wrong. Like, you knew exactly what Everton were going to do. They were going to start well. They were going to get the crowd up. They were going to focus on set pieces. And if they took the lead, they were going to then drop deeper, still play for set pieces and hit on the counter-attack. It's not rocket science, and it's exactly what happened. It was very naive from Liverpool, and it was very poor performance.
Yeah, I was just saying before this podcast started, actually, I think the last one I was on, we were talking about, I think it actually might have been with you two, we were talking about the Everton game had been rearranged for a midweek late night fixture. And at the time, I just thought that, oh no, like that's got all the hallmarks of a upset, you know, under the lights, Goodison Park with their crowd right behind them. And just from like the first few minutes, I don't know if you, Beth, but if you were watching it, just as well.
Yeah, I was in the away end, unfortunately, last night.
Yeah, and just from the beginning, I don't know if you thought the same, but you could just sense it was going to be one of those nights.
Yeah, definitely. I think Theo got his spot on there. I think naive is the best word to describe the way Liverpool approached that game. Everton, you know, if they came out and played man for man, they'd get completely overrun. They were always going to try and make it scrappy. They were always going to try and make it ugly. They were always going to try and play for set pieces. And, you know, you give 5-6 set pieces away in the first 20 minutes, then you're going to get punished. And ultimately they did. It was a really poor goal to concede and probably actually a goal that sums up everything that's been wrong with Liverpool defensively in the last few weeks. No one really taking responsibility. It's McAllister tries to clear it and comes off Konate, and it's all a little bit of a mess. And they've had ample opportunity before then to clear the ball as well. So, yeah, really poor goal to concede. And I just think, had it been, you know, in the midst of a run where Liverpool were sweeping everyone aside and we're in really good form and we're really confident, you would feel, I think there would have been a feeling within the away end as well that they were more than capable of coming back to win it. But I think the reserves of confidence within this team have just been sapped over the last few weeks in terms of some of the performances and some of the results. And I think as soon as Everton had something to fight for, it was always going to be a huge ask to come back. And they obviously have a spell, Liverpool, in that first half, probably the last 5-10 minutes of the first half, maybe the first 5 minutes of the second, where you're thinking if they get a goal now, it could completely change the game. And probably like actually quite a few performances in recent weeks, it's felt like if Liverpool get the goal, it completely changes the dynamic of the game. But they don't get that first goal. It's only, I think, before the last few games, they'd only not scored in one game all season, which was obviously against United at home. Yeah. And they've not scored in 3 of the last 5. So, I mean, it's the worst possible time that they're struggling to in front of goal. So, yeah, it was just frustrating. I think that's the most pertinent way to describe it, is that it was so frustrating because it was so predictable. And you almost think, you know, what will Liverpool do in training? Because surely they must have been expecting how Everton played last night.
I think we've got to give Everton credit for their performance, though. Like, you think back to the FA Cup defeat to Manchester United. Liverpool lost that game. Manchester United didn't win that game. But this one, Everton were deserved winners. Yeah. They got it spot on with their tactics. They know how they want to play. They know the best way to get the best from them. And it worked. Calvert-Lewin, who has barely kicked a ball, I think, for 2 years, he's not scoring goals. But then he's put in the performance of his life. And he was brilliant. He made Konate and Van Dijk look like schoolboys. Their own centre-backs were great as well, keeping the Liverpool players quiet. And they just ran the show. Pickford made another number of good saves. And we can be snobbish about Sean Dyche's style all we like. They got it spot on. The crowd rose to it and they got the job done. It's Liverpool that walking away out of the title race without any answers.
Yeah, and Theo, normally this is the time of the season where things start to ramp up. Like, performances tend to improve as the season goes on. Man City, you know, they often click into gear and start putting the sequence together. Liverpool obviously have done that before as well. So why this time has it gone backwards for Liverpool? What do you think has happened in the last month that has caused such a huge drop-off?
I think part of it is the injury crisis and the injuries since. Look, when I say Konate's out of form, Nunes is out of form, Salah's out of form. Konate got injured before the international break. Nunes missed the international break because of injury, and we all know what's happened with Salah. And they've just not got back up to the levels they were at before those injuries. Szoboszlai is another one who, he was great. Then he gets, hamstring injury, New Year's Day against Newcastle, comes back, does it again. And they just look sloppy. Like, maybe it's the European football. Maybe it's the schedule. Like, we've seen Liverpool not having much time on the training pitch. And it was the case last year, and Klopp came out and said it was why Curtis Jones wasn't getting a run until they're out of Europe, because they could give him the training he needed to get up to speed. Maybe that is an easy excuse, but yeah, it's just very hard for Liverpool because there have been so much strain on the players there, and it's just taken its toll. They've run out of steam. I do think Klopp got his team wrong yesterday. He should have started Endo. You could say he should have started Harvey Elliott. Like, you look at the team that beat Fulham. That was a fresh team. They were really up for it. Granted, you can't play that front three yesterday because Gakpo's misses is giving birth and Jota's out injured, but you could have still stuck with Quansah or stuck with some of the midfield bodies. It was the fresh legs. They were a bit more in form. He's hoping that the players that he took out against Fulham, having that rest, will get them back up to speed. And that clearly wasn't the case. They still look miles off it. And you can cope with one or two players being miles off it. But when it's four or five, you don't stand a chance. You're just hoping that it's going back to the other players against West Ham at the weekend, and you turn into an Elliot and he can rise to the occasion. Gravenberch, Quansah, because I don't think he's not to start again this season at this point. It's been so poor recently. And if Gakpo was fit, if Gakpo and Jota are available, then you're taking out Nunes. You're probably taking out Salah as well. Like, this is a lengthy loss of form for Salah. And there's only so many times you just keep him in that team going, all right, we'll get his goal now and be fine. And it's just still waiting, still not coming.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Beth, we saw the same old problem again last night that we've seen all season. 15 times in the Premier League now, Liverpool have conceded the first goal. And I guess there's only so many times you can do that before it catches up with you. And yesterday that happened, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think as a football fan, you can always make a little bit of a narrative for yourself sometimes. And so when, you know, Nunes comes on and gets those two late goals against Newcastle early in the season, or when he gets that late one against Forest, you think, oh, it's written in the stars that Liverpool are going to go on and win the league because they've got so many... It's written in the stars, yeah. They've got so many late winners. But like you say, you can't keep doing that. I think it's 44% of the games, as you say, 15 games that they've gone behind in. That's not a title winning team. You can't keep doing that. And I think as much as, you know, you hand in the incentive and the initiative to the opposition, you're also expending so much energy mentally and physically to come back time and time again. And that's so, so difficult to do. And they were tremendous at it for so much of the season. But I think when you couple that with sort of physically, they all look tired, they all look fatigued, whether that be because of injury. And then you've got the mental toll of having to come from behind again and again and again. It's just a little bit too much. And yeah, it was frustrating. And I think, like I say, as soon as that first goal went in, I wasn't confident that Liverpool will come back. And I think that's the big thing. I think if that is going to be your game plan, you're happy to concede early chances and concede early goals, then you have to have that belief that you can come from behind. And I don't think Liverpool have had that the last month. And I think that has maybe been their undoing a little bit.
Yeah, it was like the season they won the league, they went behind a lot that season, but you almost felt like it was almost inevitable they were going to win it. But I think this year it's kind of been, oh, let's hope. Like, it's more been a lot more desperate, and you know, it's never looks like assured that they were going to do it.
Yeah, and I think if you're going to let in that many goals, then you have to be prepared to score even more. And I think because sort of the defensive form, the bad form has coincided with all of the forwards being off the game. I mean, Nunes has got one in his last 9, Diaz has got one in his last 6, Salah's got one in his last 8. Those aren't numbers. Yeah. Those aren't numbers that reflect a title winning team. And you know, every player goes through dips in form. You know, Arsenal don't necessarily have super prolific goal scorers. But if you can share that load between, you know, a front three or a front four or a front five, then it's fine. You know, if one of those players had 6 in the last 8, or, you know, all three of them had 3 in the last 8, it would be a different story. But for them all to have sort of the goals to have dried up for all of them, it's an impossible task. And if you're going to only be scoring one goal a game, then you need to be watertight at the back, and Liverpool just aren't.
Yeah, and Theo, we need to talk about Darwin Nunez. As soon as I saw that Diogo Jota was ruled out, I just had a really bad feeling about the game, because I thought, well, that means Nunez is playing and that means probably not going to score.
I don't know. I mean, Jota would have started anyway, because he's only just coming back from injury. Gakpo was the concern.
Yeah.
But then it was Diaz who wouldn't have started if Gakpo was available.
But Jota you can rely on to score.
Yeah.
Darwin Nunez you can't, which is the problem we have. Now, what's your take on it? Because obviously he's had a lot of support from fans over the last year, people saying he's going to come good, you know, give him time. But I think even those people, after watching last night, are starting to say, hang on a minute, what's going on? Like, is he ever going to work at Liverpool?
It's difficult to say because he has scored a lot of goals this season and he scored a lot of good goals as well, important goals, and we know he's got it in his locker. Like Beth mentioned, the Newcastle game where he's come on and he's fired it across goal into the corners. If he does that last night, Liverpool are level. If he does that against Crystal Palace, Liverpool potentially win the game. When he's getting chances, it's like he's got the horse blinkers on. He's just looking straight ahead, hit it as hard as he can, and straight at the keeper. What are you doing? Yeah. Like, the whole goal was gaping. I saw bits of the Arsenal-Chelsea game the night before, and you're laughing at Nicholas Jackson for putting it wide of the near post when he's got the whole other side of the goal to aim at. But at least he's tried to do something smart. He's in control of it to an extent. He's not just leathering it and seeing what happens. He's got it horribly wrong. Whereas Nunes, he just doesn't think. He doesn't take that moment to look at the goal. Like, the best players, they can see what's happening in slow motion and know where to put it. Like, Michael Owen was spot on with his analysis after the Brentford goal, saying, well, that's great finish, but you're not scoring that every time. You've got to vary it up. You've got to be able to go round the keeper. You've got to be able to find these angled strikes. Like, we saw Atalanta at home. He misses a great one where just go round the keeper and roll it in. He's missing so many glaring chances now. And when it's 2 years and it builds up and you are in a title race and that is proven costly, the frustration is there. But you can give him the benefit of the doubt to the extent of he's still pushing a 20-goal season. He's still scoring and setting up a lot of goals as well. And it's not just he's lost form. It's they've all lost form. Like, if Salah was scoring or Diaz was scoring, you forgive Nunes to an extent. It's just because it's all happened at the same time. Like Liverpool of old with Firmino, Mane and Salah, they weren't all on fire every single week. There'd be times when Salah was on a drought and the other two would bail him out and vice versa. It's just all falling apart now. But it will be very interesting to see what happens in the summer. Like, we know Michael Edwards is coming back or has come back. We know there's going to be a new manager. Do they have the faith in Darwin Nunes that he can be this finished article? Or is this just what it's going to be? This is the raw article. Sometimes he will score a worldie. Sometimes he'll score a hat-trick. But other times he'll miss chance after chance after chance and you're frustrated with him. You can forgive it when you've got a Diogo Jota to bail you out. But at this point, you just can't. You look at Arsenal. Haaland misses a lot of chances, but he's still scoring. Yeah. Foden's scoring goals. You look at Arsenal, Jesus has only got, what, 5 goals in the league this season? Something ridiculous like that. But they're the highest scorers in the division for a reason. They spread them around so well. Like Ben White scoring a brace in midweek, for goodness sake. You've got Odegaard, Saka, Trossard's really stepped up. Yeah. There's so many finishes in that squad. Like, Liverpool's 5 on paper, all pushing 15+. But they've all fallen apart at the wrong time.
What's your take on it, Beth, as well? Because I know, for example, with Liverpool, you've had strikers in the past like Andy Carroll or Benteke, where it's been one of those where people really want it to work, but they just don't quite fit the team. I don't know if it's quite the same with Nunez, but there's definitely a case to be made of, is there a future for him in the team? And what would you do if it was your decision this summer? What would you do with him?
Yeah, it's really difficult because I think the human side of you really wants to like and really does like Darwin Nunez because, you know, he gives it his all. He can be a nightmare for defenders. And I think for most of the season, the general consensus has been that Liverpool are a better team with him in the side. I think that's maybe changed a little bit the last few weeks, the last month or two. I think, you know, there's been a number of games where Liverpool have been chasing a goal and he's been substituted off, which when you've paid big money for a striker is not what you want to be seeing. I think, you know, there's an argument, like Theo said, his goal return isn't bad at all this season, but it's not. I think there's still a gap, there's still a gulf between being a very good player and being a great player, and I don't know if Nunes has got what it takes to make that leap. And I think maybe part of it is that the new manager needs to obviously decide how he wants to play, because I think, you know, under Jurgen Klopp, the number 9 has never been the most prolific goal scorer. Roberto Firmino was not a prolific goal scorer for Liverpool. He was so good at being the gel in that front three. And of course, he scored some fantastic goals, but for the most part, he was the one who sort of made the other two tick. And it was your wide men who were contributing the goals. And I think there has been a shift the last couple of seasons. Obviously, Sadio Mane's gone. You've got Diaz, who's come in, who doesn't have anywhere near the output that Mane had. You've got Salah, who has been performing, you know, consistently a really high level the last couple of seasons, but has now dropped. So if your wide men aren't scoring, then you need your centre forward to be prolific. So I think if the new manager comes in and says, you know, we want to bring more goal scoring players out wide, then maybe Nunes still has a future. But if he's to be the main man, then I don't think he is or will ever be the main man for Liverpool.
I remember when Liverpool first linked with him, so it was when he was still looking like he might be more Man United bound than Liverpool. And our colleagues were asking around about him, and they were told he's good, but he's more West Ham's level. If he was at West Ham United, you're looking at him going, yeah, he's a decent player. He can get away with what he's doing at West Ham because you don't need to be that killer. You don't need to score every single chance. You still get a few chances, you're still scoring a few. If you're a West Ham striker and you're scoring 15 goals in a season, you've had a very good season. But if you're Liverpool's number nine, especially when we could potentially be looking at a post-Salah future soon, you need to be 25, 30 goals plus. You need to take those big chances. You need to score in the biggest games and be the one who's getting these wins, who's getting these trophies. And we've not seen it enough from him yet. Like, we've seen some amazing goals from him. Like, you think Bournemouth, you think Sparta Prague, but then you also remember some of these awful, awful misses. If he just takes a handful of his chances in the past month, we're not saying Liverpool are out of the title race. It is going to be a big summer for him because he's got to impress the new manager and he's got to go again. And it's not as though this is a rare blip. He did the exact same thing last year. It all just fell apart from him in a couple of months and he came back stronger. Maybe part of that is a winter break. Like, we use it as an excuse for the young foreign players a lot because they're not used to it. But when you've had this second year, you want to see him adjusting to it more now. He's still a very popular player. You want him to succeed. But he's not a young boy. You can't give him the excuses anymore. He needs to step up and be the main man.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Yeah, I actually had a text from a Benfica fan, a friend of mine, last night. And he basically said, I told you. Because he, when we signed him, he said he's not the player you think you're getting kind of thing. He's going to miss a lot of chances. And unfortunately, that's been proven right. But moving away from Nunez anyway, he's not been helped by the fact that Salah's form has just gone off edge of a cliff. And Diaz, although he's been trying, he's just not as clinical in front of goal as maybe Jota or Salah normally is. What do you make of Salah's form then, Theo? Because, I don't know, again, last night, he just looks completely different player at the minute. That shot in the first half where he's put it over the bar.
Did that a few times, didn't he?
And it just, something's not looked right with him either. I don't know if it's coming back from the injury or what it is, thinking about the summer or Klopp going. What do you think of Salah's performance?
I don't know what the answer is there because it's really quite strange. Like, I was at Brentford when he made his initial comeback and he missed a couple of chances there. He was looking a bit rushed. There was one, I think a low cross comes to him and he's got the goal gaping and it just hit his shin moments after he came on. And then he was one-on-one and he puts it wide of the near post or something before he scores a really well-taken goal. And you put that down to rustiness after a lengthy layoff, probably the longest easily of his Liverpool career. And then he misses a few weeks again. But at least in that Brentford game, he was in the heart of the action. He was involved. He was making things happen. And he's going to miss chances. But then when he finds his feet, he scores chances. But he's just looked anonymous in so many games recently. He's just on the periphery. And when he comes in, he rushes at his shots. There's either no power in it, it's straight at the keeper, or it's horribly blocked because he's trying to do something smart and there's too many bodies in front of him, or he's cleared the crossbar. He doesn't look like Mo Salah. And it's hard to judge his season because he was so good the first half of the year. He was scoring goals, he was getting assists, and the eye for the pass is still clearly there. There's a number of great through balls. He's still playing the rare times he does get on the ball. But you don't want to see Mo Salah wide on the right, cutting in, having to beat six men or curl it past them. He was doing that in his first year when people maybe weren't knowing what to expect from him. But everyone knows his strengths now. You want to see him in the box, quick feet, sidestepping one challenge and then rolling it into the corner. Or playing those smart through balls. Maybe he needs a more central role. It's just fallen apart for him now. And he's nearly 32. He's had this lengthy injury. He's not going to score as many as he did the last couple of years. Is this natural decline? Have we seen the best of Mohamed Salah and there's only one way from here and it's down? or is it just the long-term effects of that injury in AFCON? Give him a full preseason and he's good to go again. That's what the case was 2 years ago. Obviously, he didn't have the injury, but he had a really hard AFCON campaign and he was rubbish for 6 months after 6 months where he looked like he was going to win the Ballon d'Or. You hope you get that recovery again from him, but it's a bit hard to give him that benefit of the doubt when he gets to that dreaded age. Mm. Like we've seen Firmino and Mane, what have they been doing in Saudi Arabia? Age comes for us all. Don't want to write him off just yet, but you do ask more questions than you did 2 years ago. We'll yeah. see. You just want to see this revival of form from him in the next couple of weeks, but there's only so many times, like I said earlier, put him in the team thinking this will be the good day, this will be the game where he gets a goal and he's firing again. It's just not happened.
Yeah, and Beth, Liverpool have got some big decisions to make this summer over who stays and goes in that area, similar to what they had a couple of years ago when Mane, Firmino obviously left the club. And it'd be interesting to see what happens because Luis Diaz has been linked with the likes of Barcelona and Real Madrid.
PSG
as well, yeah. Salah obviously was subject of the Saudi interests, which Liverpool rejected a year ago. Nunez, I'm pretty sure at one point was linked with Chelsea after Liverpool had bought him. So I'm sure Chelsea will spend some more money on some new players this summer.
I'm not sure he's going to be the answer to Chelsea's problems.
That's the one place you could ship him to. They'll buy anyone. So what would you do regarding those three this summer? Who would you keep and who would you sell?
It's a really difficult one because I think you feel like you're being a little bit reactionary because 7 months of the season, you were really pleased with Liverpool's forward line. You know, they might not have all been great every week, but as a collective, I think it felt like they had five really, really strong options and five options who offered something a little bit different. And I think all of a sudden now there are question marks over all five of them and whether they've got a future at the club. You know, Diogo Jota, I think, is brilliant, is Liverpool's most clinical finisher, but he's only useful if he's fit, and you know, you can argue he was maybe unlucky with the impact injury he picks up at Brentford, but the fact of the matter is most seasons he misses 20 games with injury, and you can't afford, especially if you're a team that needs goals and, you know, the forward line isn't firing, you can't rely on someone who is going to be out, you know, 3-4 months of the season. So I think for that reason you have to put a question mark over his head. I think Cody Gakpo as a player, really elastic, seriously the great asset in play position, being some jury day of Finley, as you know, as I think of,
still haunted by that City miss, not that it matters now, but it did at the time.
But that could have changed the whole course of the season, couldn't it? And that's the frustrating thing. But yeah, he needs to be more clinical, but I also think his ability to drive at players and take on players and the energy that he brings is huge. And actually, if I was Liverpool, he's one player that I would really be looking to keep hold of. I do wonder, actually, you know, I'd quite like to see a front line of like Theo said, put Mo in the middle, you know, have him, you know, dropping a little bit deep at times, maybe playing almost as a number 10 and then, you know, being in the box ready to pounce on things. Have Diaz on the right, because I thought he actually did really well there against Fulham, and then Gakpo in his preferred position on the left, and give that a try and see how that goes. Nunez, it's so difficult, isn't it? Because I think obviously the financial element comes into play. Liverpool spent big money on him. Are they going to recoup half of that at this moment in time? Do they keep hold of him for another season, hope that he comes good, or at least comes good enough to command a higher fee, you know, in 6 months' time or a year's time? And then Mo Salah, it is so difficult because I think the first half of the season, I'd have 100% said, put a blank check on the table, give him a new contract, let him stay for another 4 years, because he looked like a player that, you know, he might not have been as explosive as he was when he first came to the club, but still could contribute so much and was in such peak physical condition that you felt he could keep going at a high level till he was 35, 36. I think obviously now post his injury, it doesn't look like that. And that is the big question, and that is the question that the decision makers will have to answer: is it temporary? Is it because of his injury? Is he not fully trusting his body? Maybe, you know, with a rest, with pre-season, does that change, or is this the beginning of the end for him as an elite level player? And you know, I would, the sentimental part of me would keep Mo Salah around forever, but I just think he has been anonymous in so many games. And it's not just the fact he's been missing chances. It's been he's not really been involved in creating a lot of chances the last couple of weeks. So Yeah, it's a difficult one. I've not really answered your question. I don't envy the people making the decisions, because they are big decisions to make. And I think my biggest worry and the biggest thing that's come from the last few weeks is that when Jürgen first announced that he was leaving, it felt like he was leaving the squad in really rude health. You know, the midfield rebuild had been done. You had five really competent forwards. You had a lot of quality in the back line as well. And it was maybe, you know, you might need one or two, three max players to really make this an elite squad. Mm. I think now you're looking at it and you're thinking it might take seven or eight players. Now that might be reactionary. That might be just because they're all in a little bit of a rut at the moment. But I think there's probably only two or three players who are untouchable in this team at this moment in time. And yeah, it looks like it's going to be a big job in the summer.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Theo, Richard Hughes and Michael Edwards, they're going to ask for your opinion later. So which of the forwards are you going to sell this summer?
You can make an argument for all of it, can't you? I've always said with Salah, as long as he's getting you close to 30 goals a season, it's not a debate. He stays. This season, he's not. So like we said, is that decline? Or is it just he's missed 4 months of the campaign, 3 months of the campaign? If you give that back in, it's normal standards, normal services resumed. There isn't a problem. International tournaments could come into this a little bit, I think, in the summer, because a new manager starts pre-season, start of July. You're not going to have Nunes there. You're not going to have Diaz there because they've got Copa America. Jota's going to be at the Euros. So that's Salah's chance to come in and absolutely smash it in pre-season.
Which he always seems to do.
But then he could have his eyes on a move somewhere. But then Saudi isn't as lucrative as it is or was a year ago. It's just such a hard one on him. I remember when Torres left, everyone thought that was a really weird decision from Liverpool at the time. Like, he was this leading striker for him. He hadn't had the best season, and they just put it down to the team's not playing well. It's a loss of form. But then 50 million, they did the right thing, didn't they? They sold him at the exact right moment, got maximum profit, and we all saw what happened with Torres. His body let him down, he fell apart, he was not the same player. So you've got to have faith that the guys behind the scenes at Liverpool, they know the perfect time to sell Mo Salah, the same as they knew when, Mane can go now. They let Firmino off the other year. So we'll see if they think it's the right time for Salah or if there is life left in him. It depends on the offers, whether you let him see out that contract or not. Like, even if it's go at the end of your contract, are you getting more goals from him next year than whoever comes in? But then you look at the rest of them, you can't change everything. Like, they revamped the attack 2 years ago. So to be having this conversation, as reactionary as it is very concerning. Like, they spent so much money to get in Nunes, to get in Diaz, to get in Gakpo. Carvalho was part of that. Jota's part of that. If something has gone wrong there behind the scenes, if we're saying this attack is not up to scratch, maybe they just need another couple of bodies to complement it. Like when they were going for four trophies in 21-22, it was five from January onwards, plus Minamino, plus Origi. And then you still had Oxlade-Chamberlain, you still had Elliot. You had more options there. Maybe you put a sixth one in and it does ease the burden. Because like this three that started last night, there was no one else. Gakpo, he'll be back at the weekend, you'd imagine. But Jota are out for another couple of weeks. If they've got that someone there who can rotate it, Nunes isn't starting or Salah's not starting, you've got something there that you can take the players who aren't playing well at the firing line, turn to someone else. You look at the players here, Diaz is getting a bit older. Is that why you move him on? His dad's been saying a lot, hasn't he, in the media? But then there's also the suggestions that Diaz wants a new contract and he feels he's underpaid. Is that the only reason they're flirting with these foreign moves? Is that reason why it's all of this agent talk to try and put the pressure on Liverpool to give him a new contract? Like, you can ask questions about Gakpo and say he doesn't score enough, but then maybe you want to see him in his favourite position. Maybe Diaz goes, he plays on the left wing, everything's fine with Cody Gakpo. And Nunes, maybe he just needs another manager, needs another year to go again. It's not answering your question because you can go into it again and go, depending on what the manager wants, he can go, Salah, your time's done. Or he can go, Diaz, your time's done. Nunes, you're not for me. Gakpo, you're not for me. Jota, you're too injury prone. But you can't start from scratch. At least three of them, if not four, are going to be at the club for the start of next season.
You two wouldn't last a day on the transfer committee, I think. You've got too indecisive.
I think regardless of who goes, and like Theo said, I think at least three of them will stay. Someone new has to come in. And it can't be a Minamino or an Origi, like a squad player. It has to be, I think. And again, I wouldn't have said this a few months ago, so maybe it is me being reactionary, but I think they need to bring in someone who is going to be Liverpool's main man, because I don't think that Mo Salah is necessarily going to be that going forward. I think if he stays, we might see his influence wane even more as the seasons go on. I think Nunes, like we've said, I don't think he's maybe quite up to the task. I think certainly, you know, if he was content with being a squad player and he was still chipping in with 15 goals a season.
Well, that's how he started the season. Yeah. And just made the shirt his own.
Well, then, you know, if he's doing that, then he's certainly, it's not as if, you know, fans are saying, get him out of the, well, some are, but, you know, I think he's still got a massive part to play, but I don't necessarily think it's as the main man. So I think you need a, you know, for example, an Isak from Newcastle. But I'm not entirely convinced that Liverpool will go and spend big money on a striker because of the money that they've spent in recent years. So it will be interesting to see what they do.
We've also got to consider the academy here as well. Like, we saw it with the midfield. They didn't want to go and bring in someone who's going to block Bacetic's pass. You're not going to want to bring in someone who's going to block Jadon Dans's path. Like, you're going to give him game times, and we know the options are going to be limited somewhat for him next year because they're back in the Champions League. You can't just go, here, go and play in the Europa League. It's only going to be League Cup, FA Cup, and then a few sub-appearances in the league. He's still very young. He's not the answer yet. And maybe that's a succession there where Nunes, in 3-4 years' time, if he's still at the club, he moves on. Dans comes in, and you can do that sort of thing. But it's a very tough balancing act here to have the right players at your disposal who are going to score goals, who are going to win games, selling on the players at the right time for maximum profit, and then having the space to bring the academy players through. Like, if Jadon Dans had started last night because Nunes is out of form, because Salah's out of form and Liverpool lose 2-0, everyone's slating Klopp going, why the hell are you starting Jadon Dans? You've got an £85 million striker on the bench. Like, there's always that way you can turn the narrative here. And it's always more difficult because your manager's going. He's not part of the future. He's not part of who's coming in, who's staying. So a lot for the new manager to work out. And granted, we've not spoken about it much. We might do it in a bit. I think that'll be more tomorrow's podcast or in it on Mr. Slot.
Yeah, just going on to Klopp then, you talking about him not being part of the future. Obviously, announced he was leaving start of this year, and a lot of people have speculated about whether that's had an impact on the players. And you know, you do see them sometimes in games recently where it looks like it's weighing heavily on them, and that was that expectation to give Klopp the farewell he deserves. And you look at Trent on the bench last night, like, with his you know, slumped in his seat with the shirt over his head. I think that someone like him in particular, who gave him that pathway into the team and was his only manager at the club, he probably feels like you're letting him down. Do you think that's been a factor of, well, there's been so much desperation sort of in their play as well?
I do think so. I think, you know, I mean, I go into every season expecting Liverpool, you know, under Jurgen Klopp anyway, expecting Liverpool to be competing for the league title. But, you know, if you put in sort of your realist hat on coming into this season, the main goal was getting Champions League. And I think, you know, it's easy to say now because it hurts having lost last night and in the manner that Liverpool did. But if you'd have said Liverpool would finish the season in third place, they'd win the Carabao Cup after, you know, some of the performances of last season, you'd have said that's a great season. And if Jurgen Klopp hadn't have been leaving, you'd have thought, well, that's progress for their next season, for them to go on and challenge for the league title. I think Klopp announcing that he's leaving turned it from a transition season to a season where it was all or nothing, really, because it was his last chance to win it with the club. And I think, you know, as fans, I think we all feel slightly cheated of the fact that the one league title that we did win, and you know, people can call it a COVID title all they like, Liverpool won that title long before the break for COVID. But, you know, that they got to celebrate that, they had to celebrate that behind closed doors was really tough. And I don't think Liverpool fans feel like that real release of emotion that should have accompanied, you know, the first league title in 30 years, I don't think that was ever really fulfilled. So it almost felt like because of that, the intensity, the emotions, everything was heightened this season. And maybe that has had an effect on the players. I think it's had an effect on the fans. I think, you know, certainly in that Crystal Palace game, it felt in the stands just like a real anxiety and a real almost exhaustion at like, are we really going to let another opportunity slip through our fingers? And I think, you know, that probably hasn't been helped by Klopp leaving. I had a look earlier, Liverpool, since Klopp announced he was leaving, have the third lowest shot conversion rate in the league. which, you know, you can maybe make a link between the two, but you can also argue that at the end of the day, Liverpool are not the 17th best team in the country. They're at worst the third best, so that is unacceptable, and you can't explain that away by simply saying it's because the manager's announced he's leaving. But I do think it's had an impact. One thing I will say, because I know Klopp's been getting a little bit of criticism for announcing it when he did, I don't think it could have been helped. I think he announced when he did because in football it's so rare that things, you know, don't get leaked to the press. I mean, we had absolutely no idea that day when it was announced. Was a complete bombshell to the whole media, really. So I think if he'd have left it much longer, it probably would have got out. So I think he had to control that narrative and make the announcement in his way. So I don't really think there was a way around it. But I think it maybe has had a little bit of an impact.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Yeah, and Theo just looking ahead then to his potential successor.
Oh, I thought I was going to get asked if he had an impact on the season.
Oh, you can if you want. Go ahead.
Yeah, I wrote it a couple of weeks ago, actually. I think it's put too much stress and strain on all these games. Mentally and physically, like, the pressure is so high and the emotion is so high that every game takes it out of you. Like, there have been times when Liverpool's scrambling against Brighton and Sheffield United and the fans are really up for it. They get them over the line and it's like, we've got another 3 months of this. And they've just run out of steam here. Like Beth says, like, there wasn't really going to be a right time to announce it, and it's probably going to get leaked if you held onto it longer. I look at when he left Borussia Dortmund, that was announced in April and they finished the season strongly. Maybe he's looked at that and thought, if we go earlier, we'll have more of a knock-on effect from that. But when it's in an inexperienced squad that is in their first year together, that doesn't quite have that experience of getting it over the line, they're just looking young, naive, tired, fatigued, run out of ideas. If he'd said it in, I don't know, January 2021, when Liverpool were having that blip in the COVID year, without the injuries, but when it's the players that have won the Premier League, that won the Champions League, I reckon he gets more from them here. But these players, they're just a little bit less on that. They're still very early on in their journey, and it's just very difficult to piece it all together. But it's strange looking at this season as a whole, because if you'd said at the start of the season, Liverpool are in the top four, they win a trophy, Salah gets 25-plus goals, Nunes gets 20, all your front five get 15, you're going, oh, happy day, that's a great year. And then you throw in Klopp's leaving, still a nice enough send-off. But then they decided to just go for the title, look like they could win everything and then fall apart at the wrong moment. It feels like it's ending with a whimper now, when it should be he's passing on the baton at a good time and leaving it in a better state. And I'll let you finish what your question was going to be there before I interrupted you. I'm guessing it's the future and the next manager.
Yeah, it was just about Arne Slot. Obviously, he's now the man being, you know, linked as the favourite for the job. How would you make of that as a potential appointment? And would you be, you know, happy to see that happen?
I think we've all got to be open-minded with who the next manager is. Like, we've had Jurgen Klopp in charge for 9 years now, and everyone wants him to stay. Like, it's going to be a very tough act to succeed him. That's why you're more happy with Xavi Alonso, because he's already got that relationship with the club. You can embrace him that little bit more. Whereas anyone else, you're a bit more suspicious of them. Like, you're waiting and you're going, go on then, impress us. And he's going to have to make certainly a big impact in that first press conference, that first pre-season, that first transfer window to win everyone over. But that was going to be the same with everyone. Like, Ruben Amorim, supporters maybe bought into that once Alonso had said no. And now it's, oh, they're not actually going for him. They've called their interest. It's like, well, is this them going elsewhere, looking at third, fourth on the list? And if it was a bit underwhelming. But then when you read up on Arne Slot, he seems like a good fit. He's not proven outside of Holland, but he's one of these managers that's really, like, schooled on the game, knows what he wants from his team. And there's a similar style with Jurgen Klopp in that high-pressing, attacking football. I think they're some of the best finishers in Europe, aren't they? Feyenoord, they won the league against the odds last year. They won the cup this season. They got to a European final. That CV is a bit more complete than Amorim's when you break it down like that, or certainly more complete than Alonso's. It's just very early days to pass judgment on him. Yeah, you're hearing positive things, but you just got to wait and see until he's in that seat, until he's there, taking charge of those first training sessions, putting out his first team and seeing how they respond to him. One thing I can give you positively out of it is his assistant is also the Netherlands assistant manager. So he's worked with Gravenberch, Gakpo and Van Dijk for 18 months. So at least there's that connection that's already there. Like those Dutch boys, Van Dijk's already spoken highly of him. Yeah. So it's not a case of they're going to be, oh, I don't trust this guy, bring back Klopp. There is a base there for him to build on. But it's always going to be the impossible job.
Yeah.
It's not replacing him. It's the start of something new. You've just got to hope it's going to be successful because the last decade's been great.
Yeah, Beth, hopefully it's not a Ten Hag 2.0 coming from the Eredivisie. He does come.
Yeah, I mean, the initial sort of omens aren't great, are they? A bald Dutch manager coming to the Premier League. But no, I think like Theo said, you've got to be open-minded. I think anyone was going to feel underwhelming, you know, that wasn't Jurgen Klopp, especially, you know, I think Xabi Alonso was the one that everyone was excited about because of what he's done with Leverkusen this season. I mean, he's on course to have probably the most impressive season in history, really, when you consider, you know, all of the context around it. And obviously the romantic connection to Liverpool. So I think outside of him, there was no one that really excited me necessarily. I think
it was written to the stars until it wasn't.
Yeah. So I think anyone was going to feel like a little bit of a gamble. And I think the Amorim thing, you know, people were probably more eager to get behind that because, you know, he was the next sort of exciting name rather than necessarily because of what he's achieved. I think, you know, people quickly sort of did the homework on him and he became like the next big thing and the next sort of the comfort blanket to hold on to. And Alonso got ripped away. And so I think then the slot thing coming in sort of almost feels like, you know, you're getting your third option, even though the club, obviously, I think if they wanted Amorim, would have got Amorim. So, yeah, I think only time will tell. I think actually last night was probably the first time. And don't get me wrong, if you said to me right now, like, would you like Jurgen to stay? I would still say yes. But it was the first time I think I really looked at the team and thought we need a change. There needs to be a change. It looked like a team coming to the end of a cycle. It looked like a team that needed some new ideas. I think Liverpool have probably this season and last season as well become one of the easiest teams to play against. You know, I think whereas teams probably go to Manchester City and Arsenal and think, how are we going to score past these? And I think most teams probably come to Liverpool licking the lips and think, well, we'll at least get a couple of chances. If we take them, you know, it could be a good day for us. And I think, you know, Liverpool managed to get through that most of the time because they back themselves to outscore their opponent and they've got too much quality in attacking areas. But you know, when you need to be getting upwards of 90 points to win a league, you can't afford to be defensively as poor as we are. You need to be a bit tougher to beat. And I think whoever comes in next, whether it be Slot, is looking like it is, needs to, the first priority needs to be making Liverpool tougher to beat. And, you know, maybe, I don't know, because he seems to be more of an attacking kind of guy.
You missed
guy.
A really good pun there. You said how he slots. That would have been perfect.
You know, I think he's sort of quite an attack-minded manager, isn't he? The way he plays with Feyenoord. And I think that is, you know, as a Liverpool fan, that is what you want. You don't want to be seeing sort of a Mourinho-esque kind of team. But I think certainly a little bit more solidity at the back wouldn't go amiss for whoever comes in.
Yeah. All right, I think that brings us to the end of today's podcast.
It's like a therapy session.
Yeah. Thanks very much, everyone, for listening. We'll be back again tomorrow to preview the West Ham game this weekend. So until then, we'll see you soon.
You've been listening to the Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.